Hi, this is the voice, Michael Schiavello. You're listening to the Premium Oddscast, hosted by leading MMA odds maker Nick Kalikas, fight scientist and author of Fightnomics, Reid Kuhn, and MMA journalist Brian Heminger. The absolute best UFC betting info, picks, statistics, and analysis from the most respected authority in mixed martial arts betting, MMAOddsBreaker.com.
Welcome to the Premium Oddscast, presented by Five Dime Sportsbook. I'm Brian Heminger, joined today by leading mixed martial arts oddsmaker Nick Kalikas to break down this Saturday's UFC Fight Night 85 event, which takes place in Brisbane, Australia. If you're unfamiliar with our format, myself and Nick will break down the fight card from top to bottom, providing extensive analysis and a pick for each fight after doing our film study for the event. Looking back at our last event, our premium package bets for UFC 196 went 1-2 to lose 1.2 units overall. We won our bet on Darren Elkins, but lost our plays on Gian Vellante and Valentina Shevchenko. We also won our half-unit underdog free bet on Sayar Bahadurzada. Back to the present, UFC Fight Night 85 features a 12-fight card in total and will be aired on UFC Fight Pass and Fox Sports 1 this Saturday night. Let's dive right in. All right, Nick, now kicking off the preliminary card on Fight Pass is a lightweight bout between Alan Patrick, who is 12-1, and native Brisbane fighter Damian Brown, who is 15-8. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how is the public shifting things so far?
I opened Patrick minus 300, the comeback on Brown plus 220. Looking over at our official sponsor, fivedimes.eu, right now Patrick is minus 250, the comeback on Brown is plus 210. So line margins have tightened up a little bit. There has been some trickles of dog action coming in on Brown, some parlay action coming in on Patrick. So I don't think there's going to get too much crazy movement on this line or this fight. I think it's going to probably stay ballpark to where it is now. And as far as the matchup goes, I mean, obviously Brown's taking this fight on short notice. He's a pretty well-rounded fighter. He's fought in decent organizations outside of the UFC. So it's not surprising that he's getting his shot on the big stage, especially as a replacement fighter. The guy has a well-rounded skill set. There's no doubt about that. I mean, he's fought in quality organizations such as Cage Warriors, which I believe is one of the best outside of the UFC. And he's fought decent competition, all considering, throughout his career. He's an aggressive fighter, well-rounded, savvy vet, on the feet. Again, he uses that aggression. He throws with a lot of power. He's not necessarily going to blow you away with his striking skill. He's more of a ground fighter. He likes to shoot for takedowns often, and his wrestling's really not that bad. He can be effective with his trip takedowns, with his double leg takedowns, single leg takedown at times as well. And his takedown defense looks okay, but the problem with Brown is he can get put on his back. He does tend to make some mistakes, even in some scrambling on the ground as well. So he has some issues. I mean, he lets better grapplers take advantage of him sometimes on the ground, and of course, better strikers outstrike him on the feet as well. So what you're getting in Brown is really a pretty solid fighter that can make things interesting for Patrick, but I just don't think he has enough to quite overtake Patrick in this fight. Patrick, I mean, he's coming off a very disappointing performance. I mean, his performance against Taisimov was just horrible. I couldn't believe he looked that bad, to be honest with you. I was expecting a little bit better performance by Patrick for sure. I mean, Patrick is long. He's going to have a reach advantage over Brown in this fight. I think he's going to have the wrestling advantage as well. He's kind of a long striker on the feet. He could be effective at times, even though he looks sloppy at times as well on the feet. He still has a little bit of power, and that length is kind of tough to get around. And then again, if he utilizes his ground game, I mean, he looks for takedowns. He could be effective on the ground as well, and he has got a decent submission game. So Patrick should be a little bit too much for Brown. I think the size and just the way these guys match up and what Patrick is going to bring to the table, what he's going to try to do to Brown is just basically control him, smother him. And if Brown is able to keep it upright, I think Patrick's striking at least at range, and his length is going to probably be effective there as well. So you can't be confident, especially what you've seen from Patrick in his last fight. I mean, again, expectations were a little bit higher than they are now for me, but still, I got to pick Patrick to win. I mean, I think that as far as a betting window goes, you got to be cautious out there, and laying 2.5 to 1 or 3 to 1 might not be the best idea for Patrick. But as far as the actual pick goes, I do believe he's going to win this fight, so I'm going to go his way.
I'll just be honest. Damian Brown just isn't that good. He's an undersized lightweight. He's a local Australian fighter, which already gives him a big disadvantage just because he's not out there sharpening his tools against legitimate talent around the world. Now, the fact that he fought in Cage Warriors is great, but he did lose there. The one time he fought anybody that was even close to UFC caliber, he lost to Paul Redmond, and even Redmond's not even in the UFC anymore. So, I mean, that was a guy that washed out after two fights. So I think Damian Brown, as good as he is, he's only good for an Australian fighter. The fact that he can grapple a little bit gives him a huge edge over a lot of the local talent. Now, while Brown is a decent grappler, has okay top control and wrestling and submissions, Alan Patrick should be better than him in those areas. Patrick is a long, lanky lightweight, throws a lot of crazy looping kicks at times, and I think he's going to do a good job at keeping his distance on the feet, especially because Brown is a very patient and kind of lackluster striker that really only gets things going on the inside. So Patrick's going to, I think, hose him from the outside with all those dynamic kicks he likes to throw. And then when it does get inside, that's where Brown wants to utilize some of his Muay Thai striking skills. But Patrick likes to grab a hold of you and work for takedowns. Even though he's not the best ground fighter in the world, Patrick is aggressive with his pursuit of takedowns. And while he wasn't able to get down Mirbek Taisimov in his last fight, he should have no problem getting top position and dragging Brown to the canvas. So I think wherever this fight goes, Patrick should have the edge. And then the one spot where maybe Brown has an advantage is on the inside on the feet, will just open up opportunities for Patrick to clinch and get takedowns. So I think this is a really bad matchup for Brown, especially making his UFC debut on very short notice. So I think Alan Patrick wins, and he probably wins handedly. Now moving up for a special welterweight catchweight fight between Ross Pearson, who is 20-10 with one no contest, and Chad Laprise, who is 11-1. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
I open Laprise -145, the comeback on Pearson +105, and looking over at Five Dimes, it is Laprise -120 right now. Pearson is even money, so line margins tighten up a little bit, and it's virtually the same as what the opener was. It went from a 40-cent line to a 20-cent line. It's a tough fight because it is kind of a coin flip fight. Honestly, I know these guys were kind of got things swapped around. Obviously, both guys were supposed to face different opponents, and now this fight is still fireworks. So it's a great fight. It's a great matchup. A little bit surprising it's on the fight pass portion, but I think they still want to have some relevant fighters on a fight pass to just kind of sell fight pass. So I can understand as far as marketing goes, because these guys are going to put on a heck of a show, no doubt about it. Both these guys like to stand and bang. They're both well-rounded, but they both have their flaws, obviously, as well. Getting to the way they match up, man, it is a difficult one, because every time we count Pearson out against good strikers, I mean, he is a good striker in his own right, obviously, but against better strikers, a lot of times Pearson ends up coming through and performing really well. So you got to give Pearson a lot of respect, because to me, in the back of my head, even though Pearson's boxing is really good and he can be very effective offensively, defensively at times, I mean, he's okay, but that chin has been exposed and he has been clipped and knocked out. Now, we could say, I guess, the same about Laprise, because in his last fight against Ronaldo, I mean, he got exposed there as well, which was a little bit surprising to most of us. So now, the way these guys match up, if they do stand and bang, I mean, it's hard to trust either one, because both these guys have effective enough power and are good enough on the feet that they can put each other out. So you're seeing a close line, because you have two strikers that like to stand and bang, that have effective striking, that are capable of putting each other out. I mean, it is a coin flip type of fight, but I lean a little bit more towards Laprise. I like the fact that he's a couple years younger, and especially in MMA fight years, I think he's a little bit even younger than that compared to Pearson, at least, because Pearson's been in more wars. He's been around a little bit longer, obviously, in the UFC as well. So I think he's a little bit more worn out as far as quality competition and level that he's been fighting at. Now, this is going to be interesting, because I think Laprise can actually push a little bit of a higher pace. I think he can kind of bully Pearson around, maybe get him up against a cage at times. I think the wrestling is going to be close. These guys don't really like to utilize wrestling all that much. Now, Laprise has in the past, and I think he probably will look to do that here as well, because Pearson obviously recently has shown that weakness as well. So I think Laprise knows it's going to be competitive on the feet, and he'll probably try to mix things up and use a little bit of a ground attack in this matchup. So if it stays standing, though, it is, again, hard to trust either one of these guys, because their striking is definitely solid and they could put each other out. I still got to lean a little bit more towards Laprise, because I think he is going to be the one pushing the higher pace a little bit. He's going to have a couple inches of reach. He's going to have a couple inches of height, and I think he can control the tempo of the fight a little bit. He's going to bounce back, hopefully, and get the W over Pearson here, because, again, it was a surprising defeat to the hands of Ronaldo. You got to give Ronaldo all sorts of credit and respect for what he's accomplished lately, but still, a little bit of head scratcher here, and Pearson can definitely do the same thing. So another tough one to bet, but as far as a pick goes, I do slightly lean towards Laprise. I think that he's kind of on his way up and Pearson probably is on his way down. I know that might not be fair to say, but that's just the way I feel about it. So my pick is Laprise to be Pearson.
Stylistically, these guys are pretty similar. Both have a little bit of grappling in their background, but they prefer to stand and trade. And while this fight was kind of thrown together because of injuries and replacements, I do think it's a very interesting, compelling, competitive matchup. It's kind of funny that in their most recent fight, both of them lost to Francisco Trinaldo, but Pearson lost a decision while Laprise got clipped and put out. So that is a bit concerning because Laprise was a guy that a lot of people were hyping up as one of the next big Canadian prospects, and then all that hype kind of got derailed in that fight. Pearson, on the other hand, he's been very up and down, hit and miss. I mean, he goes out there and outstrikes Paul Felder and then follows it up by, you know, getting outworked by Francisco Trinaldo over the course of three rounds. He's can be very, very frustrating to root for. Now, on the feet, the difference between these guys, honestly, is I think power. Pearson does pack a little bit more punch than Laprise, so if anybody's getting knocked out, I think it'll be Laprise, even though Pearson's chin is not great. I think Laprise just doesn't hit very hard on the feet. He is a better volume type of striker. I think if these guys are trading toe-to-toe and nobody gets knocked out, Laprise could win on volume just by outworking Pearson, who sometimes gets a little too content to try to land big shots. So I do favor Laprise a little bit in terms of outpointing Pearson, but Pearson does have that ability to hurt his opponent. And Laprise's defense is a little bit worse than Pearson's. Now, if it goes to the ground, I think it'll be Laprise that works for takedowns, but Pearson's takedown defense has historically been pretty good, although he did lose a decision to Evan Dunham getting out-grappled a little bit. So Laprise does have that avenue to attack if the stand-up isn't working. And I think due to his high volume and the fact that he is a little bit more well-rounded than Pearson, I'm going to favor Laprise here and pick him. Now moving on to the first fight on the Fox Sports 1 prelims, we have a welterweight bout between Rich Walsh, who is 9-4, and Viscardi Andrade, who is 18-7. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I opened Andrade minus 135, the comeback on Walsh minus 105, so virtually a pick'em with a slight lean towards Andrade. And right now it's minus 110 either way. So again, basically a pick'em exactly out there. Looking across the DonBest screen, most places actually have it exactly minus 110 or minus 115. So it is a pick'em across the market. Tough fight again because, I mean, it's hard to trust these guys all the way. I mean, Andrade, I think, has a lot of potential, has a ton of ability on the feet. The guy's a stud. He has knockout power. He can be very effective at times on the ground. His jiu-jitsu game is very effective as well. I mean, he has wrestling. He has everything you want. But the problem with Andrade is he does slow down. His cardio is definitely suspect at times. His fight IQ at times is definitely difficult as well. And then he can be finished. I mean, he's got some defensive flaws along the way, standing up and on the ground. So there's question marks around Andrade. It's a shame because I do think that he could be better than where he currently is. Now, of course, he's coming off of a decent win for him against Umalatov, so you got to give him some credit there, I guess, but still a competitive fight. Walsh, on the other hand, I mean, he doesn't have, I think, the potential that Andrade does, but what Walsh does have is that toughness, that relentless fighting style that he does push a high pace. He's kind of got no quit in him, where I think Andrade will fold as the fight goes a little bit more. Walsh won't. I think Walsh will be a little bit more steady and the aggressor along the way as well. Now, of course, talking about defensive flaws, Walsh is hittable. Obviously, he's been knocked out recently as well. He can be subbed, so he has some defensive concerns, no doubt about it. This is a very tough fight. What it comes down to for me is if Walsh could probably stay upright or not get clipped and get knocked out or submitted. If it hits the scorecards, I mean, being in his backyard as well, it's not going to hurt his cause. And I think he could probably steal a decision because I think his activity in round two and round three will probably make the difference. And he could probably get away with a close competitive decision here. So I'm going to slightly lean towards Walsh because of that. And of course, on the feet, I mean, let's not forget, we can't count him out completely. The guy does have some power. He might not be as good of a pure striker as Andrade, but his activity is a little bit higher and he can put them together a lot more. And I think that he can land solid enough to make Andrade's life miserable as well. So I won't count Walsh out on the feet either. And then of course his wrestling, his takedown game along the way has improved and it will continue to improve. But It's still a hard fight to trust either guy. I think Pickham is about right either way. I mean, we could see the line flip-flop back and forth a little bit, but I'm kind of having problems deciding who is going to take this one. I guess I'm going to lean a little bit more towards Walsh. He is in his backyard. And again, if it comes down to it, I think Andrade just slows down a little bit too much for me as the fight goes. And I think Walsh is going to be a little bit more consistent, more steady. And since it is in his backyard, I'm going to lean his way. So my official pick is going to be Walsh to win a very competitive, close decision.
This bout should definitely be competitive, and both guys have their strengths. Walsh is not that bad for an Australian fighter. He pushes a high pace. He's aggressive, and that factors into how he's been able to, you know, mix and match wins so far in his UFC career. He's coming off of a victory over Stephen Kennedy, but I'm not going to give him too much credit for that because honestly, Kennedy was a pretty much bottom of the barrel welterweight on the roster and didn't really deserve to be on the roster. He was the type of guy that was only there because of taking a short notice fight as an injury replacement. And Giraj, on the other hand, he has a lot of potential. He just hasn't fully realized it yet. He hits hard, so that's something Walsh definitely has to be concerned about because, I mean, if Andrade has a big power shot come through, I think Walsh goes down. Andrade does have a decent overall ground game. He will look for takedowns a little bit. So Walsh will have to be a little bit careful there because, you know, being Brazilian, you know his ground game's pretty good. He's going to have some submission skills. But I do think Walsh might be the better wrestler. So unless Andrade is using some good entrances for his takedowns, it could be difficult. Now, on the feet, Andrade, while he does have power, he tends to sit back a little bit too much. I mean, his last fight against Gasanu Umelitov was a complete bore, one of the worst fights of the year, where Umelitov sat back and didn't do anything. So Andrade, even though he wasn't doing much, he was able to outpoint him by just doing a little bit. So if he sits back and pushes that same pace against Walsh, then Walsh could outwork him and win a decision. Another thing to be concerned about is Andrade's conditioning. He does not have great cardio. His best UFC win was a very quick first round knockout against Bristol Marunde. And if he does not push a high pace early and put Walsh away, I think it'll be difficult for him to win a decision here because I don't think Walsh is going to sit back and like Umelitov and not do anything. So I'm leaning Andrade because I do think that he has the ability to get the early finish. But if for live bettors out there, if Andrade starts to slow down at the end of that first round, then you might be able to get Walsh at big plus money after the first round. So I'm picking Andrade, but not confident about it. Now dropping down to the women's bantamweight division, we have Leslie Smith, who is 7-6-1, taking on Rin Nakai, who is 16-1-1. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
I opened Nakai minus 140, the comeback on Smith, even money, and the line has flipped. Most people are coming in, taking Smith, and the line is now minus 160 for Smith. The comeback on Nakai is plus 140. Looking across the Don Best screen right now, you see 160s, 150s out there. So a combination of things between 150, 160, 170 out there. And it seems like most people agree that Smith should be able to beat Nakai. I agree as well. I thought maybe more of the public, even though Nakai really isn't all that impressive on film, even with her fight against Misha Tate, she did manage to make things interesting in that Tate fight. But still, I mean, Nakai on the feet, she has a little bit of power, but she has a lot of work to do. I mean, her best attributes for sure, getting the fight to the floor, working her ground game. She does have some skill on the ground as far as submissions go, but she's still not a complete, well put together fighter. She's not really smooth as what I'm thinking here, but she does have some power and some strength, and she could make this fight interesting. In fact, this is one of those weird spots for me that even though I'm leaning a little bit more towards Smith, like most of us are, I'm sure. I mean, everybody's been betting Smith because they think she's going to roll over Nakai. She has a huge reach advantage in this fight, and she's definitely the better striker. And Smith is definitely a tough chick as well, but still, this is one of those head scratchers in a way that I think Nakai could probably, or possibly, I should say, slow down the pace of this fight, maybe try to bully Smith around a little bit, get some of those takedowns and just kind of control the tempo of the fight and look to submission, look for the submission against Smith as well. So it could be one of those sleeper fights that all of us are kind of underestimating Nakai a little bit, but still hard because Smith, I think, should be able to keep this fight upright for the most part. And if she does, I mean, her reach advantage and her striking skill is going to definitely come through here, and she'll be able to pick Nakai apart, landing enough that she might even be able to finish Nakai on the feet along the way. So it's a tough one for me because it is one of those kind of weird spots and weird situations for me, but I'm going to lean like most with Leslie Smith to get the win over Nakai. But this is another one that I think at the price, you got to be careful now, because I think laying about 160, 170 on Smith over Nakai in this kind of strange spot might not be the best idea. So personally, I'm going to pick Smith, but again, for some reason, I'm just not that confident. And I think the way these guys match up, or the way these girls match up, I should say, Nakai might be a little bit better than most of us give her credit for. So my pick is Smith, but again, not too much confidence in it.
This fight entirely is going to come down to whether or not Rin Nakai can get takedowns. She is at such a monstrous physical disadvantage due to her stature in the women's bantamweight division. I mean, she's given up 8 inches in height against Smith, 5 inches in reach. She is just so tiny. She has the physical build of a strawweight, except for the fact that she is so insanely muscular and stocky. So it's very awkward to fight her, because you pretty much have to keep your distance and just pick her apart. And I think that's what Leslie Smith is going to do. She's a very high volume fighter, one of the highest volume strikers in the entire UFC roster. Like, she just constantly lets strikes fly. She has a great pace. She can keep it up for 3 straight rounds too. Her problem is she's hittable, but thankfully, Rin Nakai is not a striker whatsoever. I mean, she has a terrible pace. I mean, Misha Tate just put on a striking display against her when they fought. Nakai did get a couple takedowns against Tate, which is huge. And if she's able to do that against Leslie Smith, it could help her win some rounds. Nakai is very physically strong, and she does have a solid overall grappling game. So if she gets Leslie Smith to the canvas, then Smith could be in trouble. Now, Smith does have a good overall grappling game as well, but she is not a great wrestler. So if Nakai is able to get top position, she could be able to steal some rounds. That being said, Leslie Smith, as long as she fights smart and keeps her distance, Nakai is going to be shooting desperation takedowns, and she should be able to avoid them. So it's going to be all about footwork, and if she's able to do that and not find herself off balance, not get pressed against the fence or something, then this is Leslie Smith's fight to lose. Smith just has that insane high energy output that I think can really wear down Nakai. So I see Leslie Smith picking up either a commanding decision or potentially a late TKO, as those death by a thousand cuts add up. Now, moving up to the featherweight division, we have Dan Hooker, who is 13-6, taking on Mark Adiva, who is 6-2. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I open Hooker -215, the comeback on Adiva +165, looking over at Five Dimes. It's right now -200 for Hooker. The comeback on Adiva is +170. So line margins have tightened up, and there is two-way action coming in on this fight. Interesting fight for sure. I mean, if you look at skill set for skill set, I think both these guys are well-rounded, underrated a little bit at times. Hooker is the more complete fighter, and I think he obviously has a little bit more hype around him. And that win over Hayoki obviously boosts that up quite a bit, because that's a heck of a marquee win for him. I mean, Hayoki's been one of the best for a long time in the sport, and Hooker, even though he was losing that fight before he landed that kick and turned things around for him, it's still going to be an impressive notch on your resume for sure. So Hooker, he seems to be getting a little bit better. The public seems to like him a little bit more as well. And he can be dangerous, because Hooker has reach over most opponents. He could be effective with the striking and utilizing that reach offensively. And then, of course, on the ground, Hooker has okay wrestling, not the greatest. I mean, he's not going to dominate people with his wrestling, but at the same time, his submission game overall is okay as well. So Hooker is a very complete fighter. He could do it all. He does have some flaws. Defensively on the feet, he gets hit a little bit too much. I don't like that. And even on the ground, he can get put on his back, even though you got to be cautious with him as well. So Hooker is one of those guys that is a complete fighter, but doesn't really overwhelm his opponents in any area. And I think that's where it's going to leave a little bit of an opening for Adiva here, because Adiva's been one of those guys. He's been really underrated. I mean, his fight, his debut win over Chorzhin, not a lot of people were picking him to get that nod either, right? And then that, unfortunately for him, it's been his only win, because he's faced some pretty decent competition since then, and he's lost both. I mean, his last fight against Mekashvili, he made things interesting for sure. Mekashvili just is a heck of a grinder, and he was able to pull out the decision win there. But Adiva showed up, even in his fight with Souza that he ended up getting TKO'd. Man, I mean, he was giving Souza all he can handle on the feet. A lot of people were shocked how good Adiva was doing in that fight. So it's one of those situations where Adiva's really underrated. I mean, the guy has some skill on the feet. He's got some underrated power. His wrestling's a little bit better than most people think as well. So this is going to be a fight. I mean, it's in Hooker's backyard, so I know a lot of people are kind of leaning Hooker's way across the board, but I'm going to go the other way. I think Adiva's finally going to get another win in the UFC and maybe in impressive fashion. I mean, Hooker's a very tough guy. He's hard to finish, even though he does get rocked, and he does get his defense at times lets him down on the feet, of course. And I think Adiva has enough power on the feet to make things interesting. He could probably steal the decision here if he doesn't get finished himself. And I think he could maybe possibly even knock Hooker out. So this is a fight that's, I think, very competitive across the board. And I really do believe that Adiva could pull off the upset win here. So I'm going to pick him to win. This should be a heck of a fight. Kind of one of those fights that are flying under the radar. Not much people talking about this, but I think it's going to be a very good, fun fight to watch. So I'm going to pick Adiva to pull off the slight upset over Hooker.
While I agree that Adiva is a live dog, I'm going to slightly lean with Dan Hooker here. Main reason, Hooker has significant physical advantages. I mean, he's got a 7-inch reach on Adiva. He's got 4 inches taller, and I expect most of this fight to take place on the feet. And while Adiva is a good striker, I mean, high-output guy, he's outstruck everybody he's fought except Kevin Souza, and that fight was super competitive. Both guys were rocking each other. One of the most fun round-and-a-half fights you'll ever see if you haven't seen it. And Adiva has been extremely competitive in his last two losses, so don't just look at him and see a 2-fight losing streak. I mean, the Mekashvili fight was close, and the Kevin Souza fight, I mean, literally, it could have gone either way until the standing TKO. So, Hooker, on the other hand, he's been very hit and miss. I mean, UFC debut was amazing, but in his two losses, I mean, he's just been outworked and outpaced by Maximo Blanco and by Yair Rodriguez. And then he did have that amazing win against Hato Yoki, but don't forget, I mean, that kind of came out of nowhere. Yoki was winning that fight, was outlanding him on the feet, and then head kick out of nowhere and put him out. So that's the one thing Hooker has going for him, is if he can land those big kicks or just big power shots, he does have the power to finish any fight at any time, but he's hittable on the feet. Absorbs a lot of big strikes, and Adiva does push a high pace. So even though Adiva is undersized, this isn't even the first time he's faced a guy with a huge physical advantage over him, because of the Kevin Souza fight. I mean, they were trading toe-to-toe, and Souza was way longer than him as well. So I can definitely see a path to victory for Adiva, but the other part of me is saying that, you know, Hooker, he's fighting close to his home turf, being a New Zealand guy. And if he lands the big shot, I think if anybody's getting knocked out, it might be Adiva. He has already been knocked out before. And Hooker has hung in there with some killers like Rodriguez and Blanco. So I'm slightly leaning Hooker. I'm not confident about it because of his striking defense, but I think he can pull this one out. So my pick is going to be Dan Hooker. Now moving on to the main event of the preliminary card, we have a welterweight contest between Brandon O'Reilly, who is 6-1-1, taking on Alan Joban, who is 12-4. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
I opened Joban minus 475 to come back on O'Reilly, plus 325. Right now, looking over five dimes, it is minus 485 for Joban. The comeback is plus 385 on O'Reilly. So line margins have tightened up a little bit. And people are parlaying Joban, obviously. I mean, in this matchup, I don't want to disrespect O'Reilly at all, but it is a tough matchup for him because he's more of a grinder, more of the type of guy that likes to get the fight to the floor. He goes for trip takedowns, uses singles and doubles well, but at the same time against Joban, he's not going to be able to be as effective. I think Joban's takedown defense is good enough where he's going to be able to keep this fight upright. And upright, he obviously is a level above O'Reilly. O'Reilly has a little bit of power, so you never know. I mean, he could always be dangerous. Any guy that's a type of grinder, wrestler type of build, of course, has that effect of power where if they catch you, especially Joban has shown a little bit of a weakness where he has been rocked, he has been wobbled in fights as well. Now, of course, different skill levels as far as striking goes. And O'Reilly, I don't think, is going to give him those kind of problems. That's why he's such a high favorite. The public's behind Joubin as well. So basically what it comes down to, I'm not going to waste a lot of time here. I mean, he's a high favorite for a reason. Joubin should be able to be effective enough along the way where he probably stops O'Reilly on the feet and finishes him, I would say, fairly early. It's just the way these guys match up. I don't think O'Reilly is going to be effective with his grinding style against Joubin, and Joubin is going to be a little bit more confident. I mean, this is kind of a step down for him, where for O'Reilly, it's kind of more of a step up. So I really think that Joubin should come away with the win here, and I think he probably does it in higher light reel fashion. If not, he should be able to take the fight on the scorecards because he should be able to outpoint O'Reilly along the way, but I don't think it's going to hit the cards. I think Joubin probably finishes him aside, so I'm going to pick him to win.
I'm going to keep this one really brief. Brandon O'Reilly should not be in the UFC, in my opinion. Yeah, he won his last fight, but wasn't that impressive. And Alan Joubin is a good fighter. He's a long, lanky, powerful striker. And Brandon O'Reilly basically is an oversized lightweight fighting in the welterweight division, who really is still only in the UFC because taking a fight on short notice as an injury replacement. I think Joubin is going to light O'Reilly up on the feet, and O'Reilly's only chance is either a Hail Mary TKO, because Joubin's biggest weakness is his chin, or repeated takedowns. And I think Joubin's takedown defense is good enough to stuff the takedowns, and O'Reilly just does not hit very hard. So it's very unlikely for me that O'Reilly's going to get anything going on the feet either. So I see Alan Joubin winning convincingly, whether it's a dominant decision on the feet or a TKO at some point. So my pick is going to be Alan Joubin. Now, kicking off the main card, we have a women's strawweight fight between Beck Rawlings, who is 6-4, and Seo-Hee Ham, who is 16-6. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I opened Ham minus 130, the comeback on Rawlings minus 110 right now. Looking for five dimes, it is Ham minus 125. The comeback on Rawlings is plus 105. So again, another case where line margins kind of tighten up a little bit. There is two-way action coming in on this fight. Line seems to be holding steady. We'll see when limits increase and after weigh-ins and all the action comes in, which way it really goes. But as of right now, I think it's fairly a decent spot because, you know, this is going to be a competitive fight. Ham, obviously, I think she's a tremendous fighter. I mean, really, she should be fighting at 105. And of course, the UFC doesn't have that weight class in here, so she's fighting at 115. And I think that she's a tremendous fighter. I mean, she has heart. She's got a tremendous amount of skill everywhere the fight takes place, really. I'm especially impressed with her striking. I mean, obviously, most people are. That's what highlights her game overall. But she can be effective, outpoint you on the feet as well, and win decisions over you. I mean, she has 14 decision wins on her resume because she is more effective by doing so. She keeps a consistent pace, steady pace. She's aggressive. She's a smart fighter. Her wrestling and takedowns aren't bad either. I mean, she's just a well-rounded mixed martial artist overall. Now, Rawlings, I think her best attribute in this fight is probably to get the fight to the floor and try her submission game, because I think that's where she could be the most effective. I think Rawlings on the feet isn't bad, but against Ham, a person like her, I think she's going to have struggle and probably get clipped a little bit more than she wants to on the feet. So she's going to want to take this fight to the floor and utilize what should be a small grappling advantage over Ham as well. I just don't think she's going to be as effective as she needs to be in this spot. So this is a barn burner because it basically comes down to grappler versus striker. And I think both of the girls obviously are above and beyond that, but I still think that Ham will probably do enough to outpoint Rawlings along the way. I don't think we see a finish here. I think it probably hits the scorecards, and I think that Ham is going to get the decision if it does. So a good fight. I mean, it should be another one of these exciting fights in the female division that we all look forward to seeing and we've kind of become fans of, really. This should be another one. It should be a barn burner, the competitive fight the whole way through, but it's hard not to lean towards Ham. I think she is a little bit better at this point, so I'm going to pick her to win.
This fight reminds me of Beck Rawlings' bout against Mizuki Inoue. Now, the difference here is Ham is a little bit tinier than Inoue, and Ham's ground game isn't quite as good. But overall, on the feet, I think Ham is just as aggressive and just as technical at times as Inoue in terms of the stand-up. And Rawlings, even though she has some physical advantages with the height and reach, I think Ham is going to light her up a little bit on the feet. Rawlings' striking defense is not very good. She gets hit a lot. And Ham fights at an extremely high pace. So even though Ham could probably do a better job of throwing strikes in combination, she throws power shots. She mixes it up, punches and kicks very well. And I think Rawlings' best chance to victory is probably to shoot for takedowns and try to get submissions. But even there, Ham has done a pretty good job of defending that area. Her last fight against Courtney Casey, she was fighting one of the biggest strawweights on the entire roster. Casey cuts a ton of weight to make the 115-pound limit, and Ham was able to stuff most of her takedown attempts and avoid ground exchanges against a pretty solid grappler. So I think it's going to be difficult for Rawlings to get things going on the ground. Ham's ground game is a bit underrated, so I think she should be able to keep it standing if she wants to. And while it's standing, I see Ham just building up momentum throughout the fight and either picking up a TKO win at some point or winning a relatively one-sided striking decision. So, Seohi Ham is my pick here. I think Rawlings does not bounce back from the long injury layoff. Now, moving up to the middleweight division, we have James Tahuna, who is 18-8, taking on Steve Bossy, who is 10-1. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Tahuna, I open -190. The comeback on Bossy, +150. Right now, looking over five dimes. Everybody's on Tahuna. -255 for Tahuna. The comeback on Bossy is +215. So no respect for Canadian Bossy. You know what? I understand. I mean, it's been like that for a little while. I think people are kind of underestimating him a little bit because in this matchup with Tahuna, this is kind of more of a coin flip than people realize here. Both of these guys have a tremendous amount of power and both these guys can put each other out. No, there's no doubt about it. Now, as far as skill set goes, of course, I know that Tahuna's levels above Bossy is a complete MMA fighter. I mean, Tahuna has some underrated wrestling. He's got some submission skill offensively. I mean, defensively, he's got some problems underground, but offensively, he could be legit and control the tempo of the fight against most people and even, you know, possibly submit a fighter or two along the way. And Bossy doesn't have as much on the ground, even though he's been working it. And a TriStar, I mean, they've definitely helped his career get better and be in the spot where he's at, where he's actually getting a shot in the UFC. Of course, we all know that Bossy stepped up on short notice and he was able to, I mean, he almost actually took a fight along the way, replacing Rampage at one time, and then he got his shot finally, and it didn't work out so well against Santos because, man, I mean, the size discrepancy in that fight alone was ridiculous, and that head kick knockout that Santos was able to land isn't really going to happen in this spot. So I'm going to give Bossy a little bit of leeway against his fight against Santos because I think the Santos, I mean, he's actually proven to be better than I even give him credit for. Santos is a legit threat in the obviously middleweight division and he can go a long way. So that loss isn't as bad as what I thought it might have been at one time or another. Now, Tahuna, though, on the other hand, man, he's been out since June of 2014 to his loss against Mark Court. Before that, of course, he had his issues getting knocked out. He just doesn't look like the same fighter that he did have some promise. I mean, getting himself into the UFC, he went on a heck of a roll there. And even his fight against Jimmo, he looked very impressive in that performance as well, even though he had some difficulty early on in that fight. I mean, he managed to maintain a consistent round two, round three, and he was able to do okay in that fight and pull off the victory. But he's on a three-fight skid against quality competition. I think Tahuna's best days are kind of behind him, and I think he's on a heck of a decline here. So he's going to need to wrestle in this fight. Even though he has enough power to knock Bossy out, I think he's still going to probably want to take this fight to the floor. Now, one thing that people have negative to say about Bossy is his conditioning is terrible. He'll gas as the fight goes. And I understand he does slow down a bit. I think people are underestimating him a little bit as far as conditioning goes. And I think actually his wrestling as well. If you look back at some of Bossy's fights, he does get put on his back. He has been out wrestled in the past, but it's hard to keep him down. So even if Tahuna goes that route, I think he's going to have some difficulty against Bossy, keeping him to the floor. And then once on the feet, honestly, it is a coin flip type of fight. I mean, whoever lands first, both these guys are defensively flawed a little bit and they both have a tremendous amount of knockout power. So this is tough. This is another head scratcher for me. I know people are coming in like Tahuna already won the fight, it seems, but man, I don't know how people can be that confident in him, even though he is the more skilled mixed martial artist, at least at this stage. I think Bossy's getting a little bit underrated here, underestimated some. So I'm actually going to go out on a limb and go against the grain here and pick Bossy to pull off the win. I think he'll be able to keep the fight upright. And man, he's got a puncher's chance, if not better than a puncher's chance on the feet as well. So he's going to want to rebound here. I mean, both these guys are coming off ugly losses, but I think that we're going to probably see a better performance from Bossy than we will Tahuna. Have a little bit more confidence in Bossy. So I'm going to pick the underdog here in Bossy.
I can completely understand Nick picking Bossy here because James Tahuna is overrated. I mean, it's crazy to think at one point he was the favorite against Shogun. But looking at this fight, if it stays standing, it's completely up in the air who's going to win. James Tahuna does not throw crazy head kicks like Thiago Santos that clipped Bossy. and put him out in his UFC debut. And I'll admit, Bossy's UFC debut was a nightmare. I mean, he showed up, short notice, looked terrible, got smoked, just was not a good performance. And James Tahuna, though, looked awful in his last fight as well. So I think both of these guys are really looking for redemption here. They're both coming off of long layoffs. And while Bossy does train at a good gym, but Tahuna is a little bit more well-rounded. I'll give him that. Even though most people know him because he hits incredibly hard on the feet, one of Tahuna's better strengths is the fact that he can shoot in. He's got decent wrestling. I mean, that helped him win a decision against Ryan Jimmo after getting rocked in the first round. He resorted to shooting for takedowns, and he ended up winning a decision, a relatively one-sided one. So if things aren't going great for Tahuna on the feet, I think he can mix things up. He can work for takedowns. Even though his ground game isn't great, Bossy has not shown anything on the floor his entire career. He seems like a guy that just wants to get in there and brawl. And I mean, he was a hockey enforcer before switching to mixed martial arts, so that does not surprise me whatsoever. Comparatively, Tahuna definitely is the more well-rounded fighter. Neither guy seems to have a great chin, and the longer Tahuna leaves this fight standing, then the higher his chances of allowing Bossy to clip him are. So I think if Tahuna's smart, he shoots for takedown within the first 30 seconds and tries to keep this fight on the floor where he'll have top position and he does have some pretty good ground and pound. If not, then he's playing with fire. So I can completely understand Nick wanting to pick Bossy because Bossy could knock Tahuna out at any moment. But I think the fact that Tahuna can mix it up is making me side with him. I think the odds are off on this fight, but Tahuna should win. Now, sticking with the 185-pound division, we have Daniel Kelly, who is 10-1, taking on Antonio Carlos Jr., who is 6-1 with one no contest. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I opened Carlos Jr. minus 505, the comeback on Kelly plus 335, and right now it's Jr. minus 500, comeback is plus 500, or 400, I'm sorry. So line margins kind of tighten up a little bit, line staying steady. People, of course, are going to be throwing Jr. in parlays. Not much respect for Kelly out there. I mean, it seems like there's not a ton of respect out there, period, for him every time he's at the betting window. But at the same time, I mean, Kelly is a big, strong guy for sure. He's got some skill. He's got the judo background you got to respect. He's got a little bit of power. I mean, he's got a capable ground game. If he could get the fight to the floor and control his opponent, he's going to win the fight. But I guess Carlos Jr., I don't think he's going to be able to do that, especially down at 185. I mean, so far, so good for Jr. I think this is the right weight class for him. On the feet, I'm not going to spend a lot of time on this because I think Jr. torches Kelly. He can knock him out, obviously. Even though Kelly is aggressive, likes to push forward, Jr. should be able to clip him on the feet. On the ground, obviously, Jr. is a better submission fighter as well. So he's got the BJJ background. So I think anywhere the fight takes place, it's Jr.'s fight to win or lose, and I think he's going to win it and could do it in a highlight reel type of fashion. The only way I can see Kelly even remotely getting an upset here is basically – repeating the same type of performance that it's cost Jr. in the past, which is just getting laid on and controlled for three straight rounds. I just don't see it happening. I don't think Kelly's going to be able to bully Jr. around all that much, and I think Jr. is going to probably finish him. That's why, again, you're seeing him as such a high favorite, and I think he does come through. So Jr. is going to continue to shine, and I'm going to pick him to win this fight.
Yeah, this is another one, just like the Joe Van O'Reilly fight, where I don't think you need to break it down too much. Daniel Kelly is old. And while he's picked up several wins in the UFC against some less than stellar competition, Antonio Carlos Jr. is the best fighter he's faced so far in his career. And I think he's going to be in really, really big trouble. Carlos Jr. has a big advantage on the feet in terms of power and durability. So I can see Carlos Jr. knocking him out on the feet, especially with that 5-inch reach advantage. If it goes to the ground, yes, Kelly does have the superior judo, so he could, and this is a very big if, he could play it out like Patrick Cummins and get in top position and lay and pray for three straight rounds. But I don't think his wrestling and top positioning is as good as Cummins. He might have decent enough judo to throw Carlos Jr. in the first round, but I don't see him keeping that position. Carlos Jr. has a very good ground game, and I think he's learned his lesson about being too content to stay on his back from the Cummins fight. So if it goes to the ground, I see Carlos Jr. at some point sweeping it, and then getting top position, and Kelly is not good off of his back. So I think Carlos Jr. can finish the fight from top position as well. And even from bottom, if he really wants to, he goes for a lot of heel hooks and stuff too. So wherever this fight goes, I think Carlos Jr. does have the edge, unless Kelly's able to clinch for three straight rounds and just pummel and do some clinch work. And again, I don't think Carlos Jr. is going to let that happen. So I think Carlos Jr. is one of the better prospects in the middleweight division, has a very bright future, and I think he makes relatively quick work of Daniel Kelly here. Now dropping down to the lightweight division, we have Jake Matthews, who is 10-1, taking on Johnny Case, who is 22-4. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Ivan Case, minus 165, the comeback on Matthews, plus 125. And since that time, the line has changed a little bit. It's right now Case minus 115, Matthews is minus 105 over five times. So early action coming in on Matthews, it seems like more recent action is actually coming back in on Case, looking across the board there. So it's virtually a pick 'em, and I kind of agree with it. I figured, honestly, more people would be on Case's bandwagon recently than Matthews. I mean, both these guys are serious prospects. Both these guys are young fighters, and both these guys are potentially contenders at 155, no doubt about that. But I think Matthews has shown a little bit more of maybe some flaws and some holes in his game recently, and I figured the people were going to come in on Case. Not the fact. I mean, people are coming on Matthews for a reason. I think this is definitely a good fight because you have two well-rounded guys. Obviously, in this situation, Matthews is going to be your ground fighter and Case is going to be your stand-up fighter. I mean, that's kind of where they're at this point against each other here. I think Case has a little bit of an advantage on the feet. I mean, he's going to be longer. He's not going to actually have too much length on him, though. He's just going to be a little bit longer. I think the reach is actually almost exact as well, but he fights a little bit longer than Matthews does as well. And Matthews is going to be the type of guy that wants to take this fight to the floor, control him with his wrestling, and beat Case on the ground. So this is kind of your striker versus grappler matchup, even though both these guys are more well-rounded than that. I mean, Matthews on the feet is no slouch. He's got a ton of power. He can put fighters out. He can be effective with the striking game. But I think that Case has shown that, I mean, he definitely has an advantage over most people that fight him standing up. So his kryptonite has been on the ground. I mean, evident in his last fight as well. I mean, and in the past, even if before he's gotten to UFC, if you look at what's kind of hindered Case in the past, it's been him getting put on his back and him being controlled a little bit. So there's definitely something to that, and it's been exploited in the past. And I think that that's what Matthews is going to look to do in this fight as well, is get the fight to the floor. He's got to be careful. Case is pretty slick on the ground as well. His offensive wrestling is actually a little bit underrated. So this is a very intriguing matchup. I mean, this is one that I'm surprised the UFC actually put it together, because these guys both, I think, have a bright future ahead of them. But that being said, I have a little bit more confidence in Matthews, even though the chin worries me a little bit. I mean, Matthews has been shook up, and you know, he's been definitely rattled on the feet, and obviously it caused him to get subbed recently as well. But I still think that Matthews can get the takedowns. He could be a little bit more effective on the ground. And if he puts Case on his back, I think he could avoid getting submitted off his back as well. So it's Matthews' kind of fight to win or lose here in this spot. And I think, obviously, again, being in the situation where it's in his backyard, the scorecards aren't really going to hurt him that it is closer to home, and he's going to have probably more backing behind him in the crowd or whatnot too. Not that it matters so much, but I think it can't hurt in this situation. And then, of course, overall, I think that he's just going to be a little bit too much on the ground for Case. So it is an interesting fight. It's a tough one to call, but I'm going to lean towards Matthews in this fight too, because I basically think he's going to outwork him on the ground and control most of the fight. That's what it's going to come down to. So if he doesn't get finished, he should win the score on the scorecards. So I am going to pick Matthews to beat Case.
Now, Johnny Case is an excellent prospect, and he has really improved overall, especially with his takedown defense since getting to the UFC. But that being said, I still think it's a liability. You saw it in his last fight against Jan Cabral, where he lost the first round clearly and then was in a bad spot for a majority of the third round on the ground. And if Cabral hadn't gassed so terribly, then Case would have definitely lost that fight. And this time around, he's facing a kid in Jake Matthews who is not going to gas. Matthews can push a high pace and work for takedowns for three straight rounds, and I think that's going to be Case's kryptonite here. The thing going against Matthews is he is finishable in both aspects. You have him, he walked right into a guillotine choke against James Vick in his one UFC loss, and then in his last fight against Akbar Ariola, a fight that he was massively favored to win, he did get cracked in that first round from a guy that isn't known for having a lot of power, almost finished, but then survived, bounced back, and then crushed Areola in the second round. So Matthews is still a great prospect, but he is vulnerable. So he's got the skill, but it's a little difficult because one really good shot from Case could put Matthews out, or if Case has really been working on his submission game, Matthews could dive into a guillotine choke or something. But that being said, I think Jake Matthews is still a tremendous prospect, and even though he went through some adversity in that last fight, I think he's getting better and better every time we see him. So Johnny Case has power. He's a good, solid technical striker on the feet. I expect Case to win most stand-up exchanges in this fight, but if Matthews gets in on Case's legs, I think Matthews is going to get takedowns. And even if he's not successful with all of them, if he gets on top of Case, I don't see him giving up that position and letting Case work back to his feet. So I think over the course of three rounds, I think Matthews can at least win two of these rounds and win a decision. And if not, he could potentially finish Case on the ground because he's very aggressive with ground and pound and searching for submissions as well, while Case gets very defensive at times on the ground. So I'm leaning Jake Matthews, but word of caution, Matthews' chin and potential vulnerabilities to submission is a little scary, but I think he can pull this one out. So I'm going to pick Jake Matthews as well. Now moving on to the welterweight division, we have Hector Lombard, who is 35-4-1 with one no contest, taking on Neil Magny, who is 17-4. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I opened Lombard -150, the comeback on Magny +110, and this line has flipped. It's now -130 for Magny, the comeback on Lombard is +110. There has been two-way action coming in on this fight, a lot of split opinions out there, but of course, more people are picking Magny to win this fight, obviously, and it's supported at the betting window thus far. So sportsbooks, as it stands right now, do need Lombard to pull off the win. This is a tough one, obviously. I mean, for many reasons. First of all, I've been one personally that's underestimated Magny throughout his career a little bit. I mean, the guy has definitely improved his skill set. The guy puts the work in the gym. He's getting better. He's getting more confident. He's pulled off some very quality wins recently. And the way he matches up with his physical size and skill set, it's very difficult for most people. So Magny is a very tall welterweight. He's got a tremendous amount of reach over most of his opponents. In fact, against Lombard, he's going to have a 9-inch reach advantage, which is huge. In most cases. So Magny, his wrestling's improving, his submission game's improving, his fight IQ is improving across the board. I mean, the guy's been a stud. So I have a lot of respect, and I've really become a believer in his skill set. He's definitely solid, but still can't underestimate Lombard. I realize that with the steroid allegations and the suspension and the time off, there's some question marks behind Lombard for sure. But then again, if you look at what the guy's accomplished, I mean, he was the reigning Bellator champion forever. I realize a lot of people might not respect that as much as being in the UFC, but still, he faced decent competition throughout his career, even before he entered the UFC. And then once in the UFC, he kept that momentum going. I mean, of course, he had some questionable, controversial type of decision losses. That was at middleweight against bigger fighters that were able to kind of – well, the Bolsch fight, I mean, that was just – Lombard should have honestly won that fight. And then the Okami fight was close as well, but he ended up getting put on his back a few times. So he's had some difficulties with some of the bigger fighters. But so far through his welterweight career, he's been great. I mean, the guy's been nothing but a stud along the way. I mean, ragdolling Jake Shields like he did. Who does that to Jake Shields? I haven't seen anybody do that, to be honest with you. So Lombard's a very outstanding fighter. And honestly, without the suspension and the time off, I believe that he could be right in the mix of that title shot. And of course, if he pulls off the win over Magny, he could do that as well. I mean, so there's a lot to like about Lombard in this fight, especially as an underdog. It's not bad. I mean, it's surprising, to be honest with you, at this point, that he is this much of an underdog, because I mean, the respect that Magny's getting, Lombard has a ton of power. He could definitely catch Magny on the feet, even though he has that reach discrepancy. I mean, he has the type of knockout power that one punch could definitely end Magny's night. And we've seen Magny's been hurt in fights. He's been knocked out before as well. So there is a possibility of Lombard landing that punch. And then even on the ground, I don't think it's going to be easy for Magny to out-grapple Lombard. Lombard has a phenomenal judo background, as we all know. I mean, again, kind of stating back to that Jake Shield fights, who ragdolls Shields like that? Nobody has, I mean, that I've seen to date. So I think Lombard has an advantage on the ground as far as the pure ground game goes with the takedown game. And even though Magny's going to be difficult to kind of adapt to because of that reach even off his back, I still think Lombard has an advantage on the ground. Then obviously standing on the feet minus that reach advantage, I think Lombard has the more power and more advantages on the feet as well. So I'm going to pick Lombard to pull off the upset win. I'm going to go against the grain where the current public kind of has moved the line, and I'm going to pick him to get the W here. But this should be a fantastic fight. I'm kind of glad they matched him up as it is. And if there's any question marks to me behind Lombard, it is with the time off. I mean, it is the steroid allegations, and the guy's been around for a long time. He's getting older, so maybe we do see some signs of decline. And if that's the case, Magny can win this fight. There's no doubt about that. But I still got to have faith because I believe that, I mean, Lombard could arguably be the best welterweight in the UFC right now. We'll see if that decline is true or not, or where he's at right now with this fight. But I mean, I'm not going to count the guy out just yet. So my pick is going to be Lombard to pull off a pretty quality and maybe a decisive win if he could control the action throughout this fight or even put him out. So I am going to pick Lombard to defeat Magny.
This fight is going to be extremely competitive, potentially. It just depends which version of each fighter shows up. Hector Lombard at times has been, you know, a destroyer of worlds, but he's been out for over a year due to his steroid suspension, and he didn't exactly look great in the Josh Berkman fight either, the one that he was on steroids for. Neil Magny, on the other hand, has gone out there and taken care of business against some really impressive fighters. His one loss was to Damian Maia, where he just got crushed during this big streak by being out-grappled. Now, that is something that Lombard could do in this fight. If you remember, Lombard's biggest win in the UFC so far, in my opinion, was his dominant showing against Jake Shields, where he just ragdolled Shields and threw him around the cage and out-grappled one of the best grapplers in the welterweight division. So that's very impressive. If Lombard can get a hold of Magny, he might be able to do the same thing, because while Magny does have improving wrestling, I think Lombard is stronger and could physically dominate him. Also, the other thing Lombard has going for him is he still has tremendous striking power, and Magny's chin is vulnerable. Now, he obviously got knocked out badly by Mike Ricci on The Ultimate Fighter, but since then, he's been rocked and put in a bad shape by Hyungju Lim in a welterweight fight. And then just most recently, the Gastelum, one of the biggest wins of his career, he almost got finished late in that fight too. Gastelum ended up winning the last two rounds, even though he's historically been a guy that slows down in fights. So I think if Neil Magny lets Hector Lombard get inside, whether it's with takedowns due to his, you know, Olympic judo level ability, or with his power, then Hector Lombard can win this fight convincingly. But Neil Magny, on the other hand, has tremendous physical advantages in this fight. 9-inch reach advantage, 6 inches taller, 7 inches leg reach. I mean, this guy is going, if he can stay on the outside, he could frustrate Lombard, kind of like Tim Boach did. Boach worked a brilliant game plan against Lombard for Lombard's UFC debut. But again, if you go back historically, Hector Lombard has been giving up huge reach advantages to fighters his entire career. He had a majority of his career spent in the middleweight division against even bigger guys. So I don't think it'll be too much of an issue for Lombard to explode inside and try to land that big right hand. So I think this fight, people are not given Lombard quite enough respect, mainly because of the long layoff and the steroids. But I think he bounces back, and I think he can knock out Neil Magny at some point in this fight. So I'm going to pick Hector Lombard. Now moving on to the main event of the evening, we have a heavyweight battle between Mark Hunt, who is 11-10-1, taking on former champion Frank Mir, who is 18-10. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
I open Hunt -165, the comeback on Mir +125, looking over at Five Dimes right now. It hasn't moved all that much. I mean, there has been some two-way action coming into this fight. Right now, it's Hunt -170, the comeback on Mir is +150. So split opinions, line holding steady out there as well. Tough fight, because basically what you have here in this situation is definitely your striker versus grappler matchup. Obviously, Frank Mir represents your grappler and Hunt represents your striker. Now, Mir has been knocked out 7 times in his career. Hunt is one of the most devastating strikers in the UFC heavyweight division. He's been for a long time. He's got that kind of crazy knockout power. So if it stays upright, it's probably not going to end too well for Mir in his fight. But at the same time, you can look at the kryptonite for Hunt. And even though he's improved through the years, it's definitely his ground game. I mean, especially early on in his career, he was subbed by. It seemed like everybody that was getting him to the ground was subbing him with that Kimura type of armbar. So he's definitely got some flaws on the ground. I mean, the last bad spot for, I think, Hunt on the ground was against Stipe. I mean, Stipe was able to have a lot of success with taking Hunt down and controlling him on the ground. Now, of course, Stipe is not really a submission type of fighter, so he wasn't looking as hard as Mir's going to look if he gets the opportunity to get him on the ground for that submission win. So other than that, I mean, Hunt has improved his takedown defense. There's no doubt about that. He's improved his submission defense. He's able to scramble out of bad spots at times. So he's been putting in the work, and it's really paid off. But against a guy like Frank Mir, if the fight hits the ground, Hunt is done. I don't think he's going to be able to scramble out of a bad spot, because Mir, as soon as he gets to the floor, he's going to be working for that arm right away. So it really comes down to who's going to do what first. Is Hunt going to land that big punch before Mir gets it to the ground, or is Mir going to get to the ground and submit Hunt real quick as well? So that's what it comes down here. To me, it's kind of a coin flip situation. I understand why people are favoring Mir in this spot a little bit, because Hunt, I should say, in this spot a little bit, because Mir has been knocked out and Hunt has shown that improvement with his takedown defense, but I'm not as sold on it. I think that Mir can get this fight to the floor. I think his wrestling at times is a little bit underrated, and he knows what to do here. I mean, he knows that he can't stand and trade with Hunt. He knows what kind of power Hunt has. So hopefully fight IQ does come through here and Mir goes for the takedown, because I'm going to pick him to win. I think that it's been a while since Hunt got finished on the ground. I think Mir is going to be the one to do it here. So my pick is going to be Mir by submission over Mark Hunt.
Without a doubt, if this fight goes to the floor, Mark Hunt's kryptonite throughout his career has been submissions, and in particular, arm submissions. I mean, he went through a stretch where I believe he lost either 5 or 6 straight fights, and either 4 or 5 of those were all arm submissions, whether it was arm bars, Kimuras, Americanas, you name it. His UFC debut, even, against Sean McCorkle, he lost by a submission on the ground, an arm submission. So I think if Frank Mir gets this fight to the floor, Mark Hunt's in huge trouble. I mean, this is a guy that submitted Nogueira on the ground, broke his arm. So Frank Mir has devastating ground attacks. I mean, his arm bar breaking Tim Sylvia's arm too. I mean, just ferocious submission ability if he can get it to the floor. That being said, the Frank Mir that's shown up to recent fights has looked dreadfully out of shape, has not even really tried to get fights to the floor that hard. It's looked sloppy when he has. So if Mark Hunt can keep his distance, work a good kickboxing game with footwork, then Mark Hunt should be able to just outland Mir on the feet. But if Mir gets this fight on the canvas, I think he can win within, you know, a minute of it being on the ground. But that being said, if Frank Mir shows up and is looking to brawl like he has been for the most part, I mean, Todd Duffy wasn't known for a great ground game, and Mir just stood and banged with him and risked everything and ended up winning by knockout. So didn't even really try to get that fight to the ground at all. So if he wants to stand and bang and risk it, I think Mark Hunt would be favorable in that situation. So I think this fight's close, mainly because Frank Mir has been looking to stand in most of his recent fights. And if he does that against Mark Hunt is by far the more technical striker of the two. Mir has power, but Hunt's chin is still pretty good, even though he has been knocked out a few times now in the UFC. But Mir lacks the explosiveness of some of the people that have put Hunt down. So I think Mark Hunt should be in a decent position here if it stays standing to either win a decision or more likely win by knockout. Frank Mir, you know, when he was blitzed by Josh Barnett on the feet, he got put out. When he faced Junior Dos Santos, he got put out. You go back historically, Frank Mir has been knocked out a lot of times. So I think Mark Hunt has a good chance of knocking out Frank Mir, but Frank Mir also has a really good chance of submitting Mark Hunt. But that being said, I'm going to slightly lean Mark Hunt. It seems like he's been devoting himself to fitness a little bit. He should be coming in shape. And if Frank Mir shows up with the huge gut like he did in his last fight against Andrei Arlovsky, then I think Mark Hunt's going to be in a good position here. So I'm going to pick Mark Hunt. But again, I'm not crazy confident about it because of the huge, huge ground disadvantage. So that'll do it for our full event breakdown for UFC Fight Night 85. Part 2 of the Premium Odds Cast featuring our premium bets will be out this Friday following the weigh-ins, so stay tuned for that if you're an MMA Oddsbreaker premium member. Also, if you'd like to become a premium member, just go to MMAOddsbreaker.com and you can sign up on the top right corner of our homepage. If we have a free play to give out, make sure to follow at MMAOBPremium on Twitter, because that's where we'll post them first. We can also notify you of our free bets via email alert if you prefer that method. Just send an email to picks@MMAOddsbreaker.com and we'll add you to our free bet mailing list. Special thanks to our sponsor, Five Dime Sportsbook. Good luck, everyone, and hopefully the betting gods are on your side this weekend.